B-Pod Studios.
Are you ready for this?
Whee!
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Let's start with Trevor Story going to Boston. This is a big deal that could potentially change the landscape of the AL East.
Yeah, absolutely. 6 years, $140 million with a fourth-year opt-out for Trevor Story. Big move for Boston. He's going to play second base. Happily, Xander Bogaerts stays at shortstop. Gives them insurance for next year, though, in case Bogaerts opts out, which we expect. He still may stay. He's certainly going to opt out, but he may stay. But if he doesn't stay, if he leaves, they have a good option with Trevor Story moving over to shortstop. One of the better players in the game. Obviously, didn't have a great platform year, so it took a while. And Boston was in there all along.
All right, here we go. Re-entry Monday on Felger and Maz. You know, one of the great things about this time of year is, Murray,
stuff happening?
Well, that too, from a work perspective, but because it's vacation time, you see people taking vacation all over the country. We get a little break from each other.
Yeah.
So we're not all here all at once.
And I think at this point it was a little necessary.
Oh, was it ever? Was it ever? So, in case you can't tell, Felger's obviously out today. Jim Murray alongside Tim McBone.
What's up, Tim?
Hey.
Go ahead. Oh, that's your hang. That was it. Tim McBone here to give us headlines. And we do have a ton to cover. Boy, a lot happened while I was gone last week.
Last week, just more than like the last 72 hours, it feels like.
Oh, my gosh. It's really. So I missed the start of NFL free agency. At least here I did. I was following it on my phone. But I don't need to tell you, as Murray just said, in the last 72 hours, major signing by the Red Sox, major trade by the Bruins. Patriots also making a little news today, a little, which we'll get to.
At least they did something. You didn't miss anything with them last week.
But they got some players in camp, obviously, for tryouts. They re-signed Trent Brown. We're going to get to all of it today over the course of the next 4 hours here on Felger and Maz. But we're going to start Red Sox. On a re-entry Monday, and I do want to start with the acquisition of Trevor Story. So I'd be lying to you. I'd be lying to you if I did not admit that I was a little worried about the Red Sox spending, like everybody. Of course I was a little worried about it. So were they going to become one of these teams that was never going to go over the luxury tax again? Is that what we were looking at? And again, not that that is the complete end of the world, because they still spend more than most other franchises. But frankly, I don't want the Red Sox taking themselves out of the running for any kind of player ever. They have the money to sign big contracts. They should sign big contracts. And if they're avoiding them just because they're risky, well, so what? So from that standpoint, yes, I am happy that they signed Trevor Story. Yes, they needed another bat in the lineup. And certainly the idea of going out and getting a premium free agent to me makes all the difference in the world. I like the player. I don't love the player, which I'll explain momentarily, but I do like the player. And well, let me stop there. Murray, how do you feel about it?
Initially, I thought this was okay. At least they're kind of spending like a big market team again, which they should be doing. The Red Sox should never be crying poor or worrying about any kind of tax threshold or anything like that. I find that obnoxious and frankly offensive, and Red Sox fans should too. Like, if any, they're one of those organizations that money should never be an issue. But initially, and I had someone, this family of people that listen daily, ask me about, oh, what do you think of Trevor Story going to the Red Sox at the airport yesterday? I was like, well, it's good for them. At least they're doing something, but it does mean Bogaerts is gone. I don't know how you could look at it any other way. And I know some people already try to downplay that, like that's just the negative slant on it. But, you know, you get this guy, and he's normally a shortstop, and right now he'll be playing second because you heard about the versatility that he brings to his game, and he's willing to play just about any position. And so that's what's going to happen. I think Bogaerts is going to be gone next year, and they'll move him to short, and then they'll put some other scrub at second base.
Yeah, and Murray, it's not the negative way of looking at the story. It's the realistic way of looking at the story. This essentially is Bill Belichick bringing in Stephon Gilmore because he's going to get rid of Malcolm Butler.
Yeah.
This is the same kind of thing. Just quickly, McBone, how do you feel about it?
I'm obviously with you guys. I think this spells the end for Xander Bogaerts long term here in Boston. But I love this move just because, look, it's a team that was really close to winning a championship last year. And you see all these moves across the rest of Major League Baseball in the offseason, you know, big time signings. And it felt like the Red Sox weren't getting involved. And when you're that close to winning a championship, ownership and your GM should be going all in to try to push you over the top. And it was a frustrating first few weeks here because it felt like none of that was happening. So I'm at least excited that they brought in a potential impact player.
Okay, so let's do this. Let's open up the phone line, 617-779-0985. Again, we're going to start Red Sox because I think this is a big story. And not because the Red Sox are now going over the luxury tax, but because they added a good player, maybe not a great one. I know this is getting a lot of hype, too, how great Trevor Story is. I'm not sure he's as great as everyone thinks he is. But to me, really, more than anything, it spells the end of Bogaerts. They're greasing the skids for Xander Bogaerts. That's what they're doing here.
Well, now more than ever. And I thought that this is already, we all thought that this has already started a while ago when people in the Heim Bloom and the Illuminati of the world started to downplay the defense of Xander Bogaerts and how they tried to make a case and continue to statistically of how he will cost them games if they continue to use him as their shortstop, which... All right, well, so what, you're now going to discount his offense, too? And what, you think he's legitimately a defensive liability? I just think that that's asinine.
It is asinine. So, Murray, how many times have you watched Xander Bogaerts play over the last few years and said, boy, his defense just cost us a game?
I've never once looked at him as any kind of butcher.
Because he's not. This idea, the defensive metrics are the worst ones in all of the analytics. They're the worst ones because they're the least accurate. Because a lot of it is subjective, and now you have to say, well, how far over would Trevor Story have gotten on that play versus Xander Bogaerts? How would we know? It's far more subjective, so the defensive metrics are nowhere near as good as the other ones. Xander Bogaerts is a perfectly fine shortstop. Is he a Gold Glove winner? Is he a great shortstop? No, but what the Red Sox have now done is they've leveraged Xander Bogaerts to the point where they're saying, if you leave, we don't care. We don't care. And I don't like this part of the story because Xander Bogaerts should be the kind of franchise cornerstone that the Red Sox build around. Now, I am hoping that what we see here is that the Red Sox are now aggressive with Bogaerts, and I mean now. Be aggressive with him now. Go to him and say, we will rip up the final 3 years of your remaining deal. We will tack on another five with raises in the first three that you would have gotten, and we'll sign you to a six-year deal for $180 million or something of the like. Okay, and I throw out that number because it's $30 million a year, and that's what the going rate is now for a shortstop. And this is an important element in this story because anyone that ignores the Bogaerts element of this is just ignoring.
Your head's in the sand.
So again, I was reading Alex Spear's story in the Globe today, and I love Alex. There was no mention of what impact this could have on the team's decision to keep or not keep Xander Bogaerts at the end of the season.
I mean, they bought themselves leverage against that player, like you just mentioned. So it's either you can move on and we'll be okay with it, or you're going to move your position because we have a guy who can play multiple positions and can play yours now, whichever story.
This guy has been or has become the face of the franchise. He was signed as an international free agent as a kid. He was hyped through the organization as he went through the minor leagues. He arrived in the big leagues, played a different position, and helped you win a World Series as a rookie. He helped you. Then he became a cornerstone shortstop, one of the best in the game, over the last 3 years. Do you know where Xander Bogaerts ranks in WAR among all Major League shortstops?
Probably top three.
Second. I even asked Milliken this so that I could get it right. And when I say second in WAR, that's overall. That's offense and defense combined. So tell me, how is a guy who sucks defensively the second best shortstop in the game when he ranks second in WAR?
Because he's not as bad.
Or
as,
if he's bad at defense, is what it
means. He's not as bad as the perception is with the real stat nerds. If he was, he'd be ranked like 10th or something like that in terms of WAR.
It's a myth. And again, it's perpetuated by the data and the analysts and everything else. So again, is he as good as Story? Probably not. Is he as good as some of the other guys out there? Probably not. I'm just, I don't want to rattle through all the names of you in the big leagues. But all together, when you take it all into account, Xander Bogaerts is one of the top two or three shortstops in the game. And you know what the Red Sox fear is in this? That they now need to pay him like it. Okay, because they signed him to a six-year, $120 million contract that was very team-friendly. And if you were to now look at it, you know who the highest-paid shortstops in the game are? Carlos Correa, $35 million a year, just signed with Minnesota. It's a three-year deal, but effectively, he can get out after any one of those years. They're all one, it's a series of one-year deals. Lindor with the Mets, Francisco Lindor, $35 million a year. Kyle Seager now with the Rangers, $33 million a year. Based on war, Xander Bogaerts is better than all three.
Right.
So Bogaerts wants to go to the market now and be paid. I would like to think that the Red Sox would keep a guy like that. Okay, now again, it didn't happen with Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts to me is a little different. He's a smaller guy. Bogaerts is a bigger guy. He plays every game. He's never out of the lineup, or rarely. And I don't have the games played in front of me, but we'll get them. This is the guy you keep. Go to him now. Get it done. Tackle, rip up the final 3 years and give him another six-year deal, and then you have him and Story basically together for 6 years. And if you want to move Bogaerts to third base during that span, fine, but pay him for it. Pay him for it. Because let's face it, the Red Sox have killed him on this deal. Okay, this deal has been advantage Red Sox. Bogaerts signed it because he wanted to stay here. So I would say take care of the guy. 617-779-0985. We'll get to your calls when we come back. Off and running on a reentry Monday on Felger and Mass.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Time offer.
The most popular afternoon radio show in Boston.
I don't want to know what this means.
Felger and Mass.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about.
I don't even know what I'm talking about. Like, what? I don't know what that is.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Slider, his favorite weapon. Stanton hits one to the monster again. And that one's off the top of the wall. Judge streaking around third. The throw to the plate. And in time to get him! Perfect execution by
this is a ball right off the bat, Matt. You're thinking second and third, one out. I cannot believe that Phil Nevin sent Aaron Judge. I'm surprised of the magnitude of that mistake. And right around here, if we pause it, you should have your hands up. And there should be no question. Second and third, one out. Hands should be up. He's thinking. And now he makes a mistake. And that's why these games are so special. Because you see unusual things when the heartbeat is racing really, really fast. The improbable happens. And that's what happened right there with Nevin.
So that was in October, if you don't remember. Red Sox ended up beating the Yankees in that game. Was it 6-2 in the playoff game? Something like that. It felt like it was a game the Red Sox were in command of throughout. For the most part, they were. And again, that's the one-game playoff between the Red Sox and the Yankees. And if you remember in this game, a lot of people forget this. It was 3-1 in the sixth inning when Giancarlo Stanton belted a ball off the wall in left center. And Phil Nevin, the third base coach of the Yankees, you heard him mentioned there, waved in Aaron Judge. The Red Sox executed a perfect relay. Xander Bogaerts threw him out at the plate. Okay, it was Enrique Hernandez to Bogaerts to Christian Vasquez. Oddly enough, you know, basically I'd call Hernandez an infielder, too. He plays center field here. But, you know, a couple of middle infielders executing a perfect relay. That was a big play in that game. Big, big play.
Yeah, but I thought his defense sucked, Xander Bogaerts, there, though. So I want to credit, and I know you've had his input on the Baseball Hour before, Matt the Stat. He emailed us in.
Yep.
About this move, and he loves Trevor Story, and it's an absolutely brilliant move by Bloom in all capital letters. He's admittedly a stat nerd. But he pointed this out yesterday, that Bogaerts was wearing a shirt that diagrammed that play. He said, you know, Bogaerts' glove work is likely a super sensitive issue on all sides, because just yesterday, Bogaerts was wearing a shirt that highlighted his relay throw in that one-game playoff last year against the Yankees. Why do you wear that? Like, you know, people are going to ask, or people that know the play, like, well, we know what you're looking at here. It's him, you know, showing the organization, my defense is not as bad as you're trying to perceive it, or that you're trying to have people perceive it as. It's good. I made that play. That was a ballsy play. Not every single shortstop can do that. I'm not a defensive liability. What the hell are you talking about here? And I'm not going to move my position. Like that, he wore that on purpose.
Oh, there's no question he wore it on purpose, Murray. And again, we'll play sound for you in 1 second about what he said immediately after that game, which should tell you plenty. And we talked about it at that time, but the T-shirt he's wearing, and if you're watching on the simulcast, you can see it or have seen it. It's a diagram of a baseball field, in this case Fenway Park, but it's a diamond. And it's, you know, looks like a diagram you would see in a textbook. And there are dotted lines illustrating where the relay took place. And the title on the shirt, or the headline on the shirt, if you will, the Boston Relay. Okay? After that game, and if you remember, Bogaerts had a two-run homer in the first inning of that game as well, which I would argue, by the way, was the biggest hit of his postseason career. Xander Bogaerts has not been a great October player. In fact, I'd say he's been a substandard one. Bad. Bad. He's got to be better in the postseason. To me, it's the one real knock on him. But the guy is a model teammate, good leader. Again, I've compared him to like Devin McCourty or Patrice Bergeron.
That's, for positional players, man, sorry to cut you off, I think he's the face of the franchise post-Betts.
He is. Totally he is. He absolutely is. And he's got a sort of air, you know, he's not loud, he's not in your face, but there's a professionalism that he takes to the ballpark every day that rubs off on other people. And so after the game, Heidi Watney was on the field and asked Bogaerts about the win. And I think, I don't remember the question if Jimmy has it in there, but I think she asked him about, you know, playing a big role in the game and the home run. And listen to what he says.
That relay to Nail Judge at the plate was the play of the game. Take me through that from your perspective.
Yeah, maybe they talk a little bit more about my defense now. You know,
I think they talk about your defense anyway.
I took a peek over. I saw the third base coach send him, and then I saw Kike through the ball, so I was already ready to throw home. But I mean, that run scored. The whole momentum is on their side. Alex is gonna get the bullpen ready, and then, you know, get a lot of guys involved. So I think being able to get that out was huge.
Okay, now again, the audio quality isn't great because of the sound in the background, but you heard what he said at the beginning. Maybe they'll talk a little bit more about my defense now. He hates it. He hates this idea that the analytics say he's a substandard or bad defensive player. He's not. Watch him play. Alex Cora was asked about this in spring training this year. And you know what he said? Look, we're working on some things with Bogaerts to maybe make his first step a little quicker. That'll increase his range. So we've asked him about that. But if he can get just a little bit of a quicker first step, we know that he's going to make the play because he handles everything he gets to. And he's right. Bogaerts very rarely throws the ball away. He very rarely muffs it. And I'm not saying zero, but most of his errors are probably, or most of the mistakes, if you will, probably come from him not having the same kind of range that maybe some other elite defensive players at his position have. You know who else people said that about? Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter, same kind of bigger shortstop that maybe didn't fit the prototype or, you know, standard of what that position should be. But if you want a guy who hits 25 or 30 homers and can play short, you're going to have to live with a little bit of a sacrifice in terms of range. So this one just, I think people have taken the thing with Bogaerts' defense way too far.
Oh, that's a given. Yeah.
And you know, that whole defensive run save thing.
It's not a think, Baz. You know, because it's bothering Bogaerts. Because he's, you know, again, wearing this shirt yesterday, saying that comment after that game in the postseason last year. He's going to be like, what are these people seeing?
Oh, it's idiotic, Murray. Every time I watch him play, I say, he's perfectly fine. I don't get it. Like, they see mistakes that aren't necessarily there all the time. And again, I'm not telling you he's perfect. But I think I saw a stat on him that said defensive run save last year, he was a -9. Okay, so now let's do the math on that. It's a six-month season. So you're telling me defensively he costs them a run and a half per month? Per month. And that's why you're going to let him walk out the door when he's basically the number three hitter in your lineup? People need to understand what the trade-off is when you have players. You know, you want Tom Brady at every spot, well, then he's going to be perfect. But a guy who's going to hit 30 and 100-ish, it is going to cost you a run and a half a month defensively at one of the best spots on the field? Oh, would you shut up and bite the bullet? What the hell is wrong? There's nothing wrong with the guy. Now, will he be a shortstop in 4 years? I don't know. But Xander Bogaerts could be, or Rafael Devers could be a third baseman, a DH by then.
Now that's a guy, if you want to get on his defense. Rafael Devers is more of a butcher than Xander Bogaerts ever
was. Oh, completely. Please. I just think the defense thing with Bogaerts goes way too far, and, you know, it's the Millikens of the world that create that problem. Anthony's on the Cape. Anthony, go.
Sweet, but about Trevor Story, but let me just say a byproduct of losing Bogaerts, his best buddy, is going to be harder to sign, okay? Devers will be harder to sign without Bogaerts on the team. That's a little side note. As far as Story, anytime I see a Colorado guy, and Tony, I'll let you run with this, I look at the split stats. They're disgusting, okay? We're talking about almost 1,000 OPS at Coors Field and like 700 everywhere else, not to mention his right-left stats. So I'm very concerned that this is another Hunter Renfrow, Bobby Dalbec, you know, 240. Yeah, he might have power, but I like Bogaerts a lot better than Story. And just because you got a bargain doesn't mean it's a great deal. Look at his split stats. They're terrible.
Okay, so look, again, and this is something that actually came up, I think, you know, before I went on vacation. At one point we were talking about Trevor Story, and I said, the Colorado guys always worry me. Okay, they always worry me, everyone. So now listen to these discrepancies, okay? And these are career numbers. Trevor Story, batting average at home, .303. On the road, .241. So on base, naturally, similar discrepancy because the average totally translates. .369, .310. So he's going to walk the same amount of times, but the on base drops 50 points, 60 points. Listen to this one. Slugging percentage at home, .603. On the road, .442. So that's 160 points. OPS, Trevor Story at home, .972. On the road, .752. 220-point difference. So now...
it's Coors Field effect.
Of course it is. So again, and look, I will defer judgment on Trevor Story. A lot of good baseball people say that Trevor Story is a good player and that he's not a product of Coors Field. But if Trevor Story is such a great deal at $23 million, and I would love for the analyst to explain this to me, why does Xander Bogaerts finish ahead of him in WAR? Like, if the defense is that important...
right, you'd think you'd be ahead of him.
Why does Bogaerts finish ahead of Trevor Story? I would like someone to explain that to me.
Well, you understand. There's certain metrics you have to look at. I'm sure that there's some numbers that they can use against you to try to downplay that.
So Murray made reference earlier to an email received from we call him Matt the Stat, who was an auction winner on our Christmas in the City auction years ago, and the stat nerd of all stat nerds. Okay, we call him Matt the Stat. He did contribute a little to the Baseball Hour. He did email in. I want to read you something from this because as soon as I read it, I went, holy crap. Like now this too, we're going to have this to justify it. I'll tell you that in a little bit, but we will squeeze in another call or two here. Let's go to Matt in a truck. Matt, go.
Hey, guys. Just wondering, this is obviously Bloom's attempt to hedge his bets with Bogaerts, but does it also kind of mean the same for Devers with talk of a possible extension coming for him? I'll hang up and let you guys.
Okay, so not necessarily, no. And really, if you want to know the truth, you could keep all three of them. So I'm going to guess Xander Bogaerts is going to ask for $35 million a year. Whether or not he gets it, I don't know. What's Rafael Devers going to ask for? I don't know. But I know this, J.D. Martinez is off the books this year at $22 million. David Price comes off the books his final $16 million. There'll be some other money that they can save. And I'm not saying the Red Sox have to have a $350 million payroll. But if you want to make it work, you can figure out a way to make it work.
They can. I know this isn't the free spending days of Dave Dombrowski anymore. But even without him, they could do it if they wanted to.
Of course they could. Absolutely they could. 100%. So it's not mutually exclusive. You can have Story and Bogaerts and even Devers. Yeah, Maz, where are they all going to play? Well, Devers could end up being a first baseman. He could end up being a DH. Yeah, what about Tristan Casas? I'll worry about him when he gets here. Let's make sure that he can play first. Yeah, what about Dalbec? Trade him. Get some pitching. God knows you need arms. Yeah, what about Marcelo Mayo when he gets here? Well, I don't know. Maybe he ends up playing second base. Maybe he ends up playing center field. If he's better than Story at shortstop, then put him at shortstop and put Story at second base. Whatever it is, we'll figure it out. It's like, what, you can't have too many good players now? Like, that's a problem? It didn't stop the Dodgers from signing Freddie Freeman for $162 million, and they're stacked already. Let's not be stupid about it. McBones, get your headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Maz.
I'm not even going to look it up because I'd rather just deliver that to you.
Facts be damned.
Yep.
Make the shirts.
Yep.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
And finally, an answer at second base for the Red Sox, who have used a ton of players at that position since winning the World Series in 2018.
Well, and he's perfect, actually, for second base. You know, he's athletic. He catches the ball clean. And I think also, as you look through these contracts, you got to look at the new rules that are coming in. Does he have range enough to play without a shift? And he does.
So there it is again, Harold Reynolds, MLB Network. And I actually think this is a fair point, that you could argue that a guy like Trevor Story will have more value when we go back to more familiar rules. Where if MLB goes through with it and eliminates the shift in 2023, then range at infield positions is going to matter a little bit more, maybe a lot more. True. Yes, absolutely. I'll still say the same thing about Xander Bogaerts, so that I'm saying right now. This, and you know, again, Alex Cora said it too, and I happen to agree with him. Not that Alex Cora gets everything right. But the idea that Bogaerts is somehow a bad defender, because that's what this has turned into.
Yeah, he's a defensive leper is how he's been painted.
Is asinine. It's asinine. So now, could he be in a couple of years? Yeah, the people in New York used to bitch a lot about Jeter all the time at the end. You tell me, do you want Derek Jeter on your team? Because I would take him. I might take him now. So I just think that sometimes the analytics stuff gets a little stupid. It's like, well, he's bad defensively. Yeah, I still haven't seen the perfect ball player of you. Like the guy that does everything right all the time. I mean, there have been a few out there that are pretty damn close. So, but most guys have warts. And when you see him every day, Trevor Story's going to have his warts too. George is in Longmeadow. George, what do you got?
Well, what I got, Maz, is that you're apparently committed to the notion that Bill Bogaerts is worth an 8-year contract if they could do it today. And that you would be looking at it. Let's assume he gets the $30 million that he's asking for, at least over part of that contract. If he's right now, he's done at 3 years. You're going to add the exposure of the team to 5 more years with him. And what has to be a downward trajectory that's already started.
Okay, so George, I'm going to stop and I'm going to let you go just because you did not hear right what I said. First of all, he doesn't have 3 years left. He's got this year and 3 more, but he has an opt-out after this season. So he's got 1 left because he's going to opt out. What I said is rip up those other 3, go to him now and give him a 5 or 6 year deal. So I never said 8 years. I said 5 or 6. Okay, that's what I said. Rip it up. Start him over right now. He's 29. Gets him into his mid-30s. Trevor Story's 28. You just gave him 6. So is he going to be a downward trajectory too? These guys are only a year apart in age.
They all are at this point. Around that age, if you're giving someone a 7-8 year deal, I mean, those last few years when they're in their mid-30s, what do you think they're going to be like?
I mean,
no matter what player you're talking about.
So again, I'm not in favor, but if you want to sign good players, you're going to have to eat money at the back end. It's a given. You're going to have to eat money at the back end. David's in Nashville. David, go.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So it certainly is a great pickup of Trevor Story, you know, because he can play short, maybe third, you know, second. And since you got, you know, Devers, who could be on a chopping block, J.D. Martinez, certainly Sale, who is now used goods, and Bogaerts, man, we could have a very good, strong, young team in the next few years if Heim Bloom can just play it right, which he probably will not. But with all of that said, trade Bogaerts, you got Marcelo Meyer, and you got Jeter Downs to complement Trevor Story.
Hey, David,
what do you guys think?
David, just quickly, yeah. How did Jeter Downs play last year?
He didn't.
He sucked. Right. He was horrible. Okay, and
correct.
So when you say you got Marcelo Meyer, when?
From the draft.
No, no. When? When's he getting here?
When's he going to show up? Oh, dude, hell, I don't know, man. Just throw him in now. Might as well.
Oh yeah, no, right. 3 years from now, minimum. 3 years. So let's wait 3 years for Marcelo Mayer and trade Bogarts now. Love that strategy. No thanks. Alan's in Florida. Alan, go. What do you got?
Why do you take calls about Mayer in 3 years when you're talking about?
Oh, it's annoying, Alan.
I hang up on him, so I'm glad you're. I mean, I got to tell you, I'm thrilled with Story, but if they're getting him to trade Bogarts, it's idiotic. Bogarts is going nowhere, and if they don't want to sign him, then they're going to end up losing in the end. Right now, not only did they get Story, if they had any brains, because right now I've told you this five times, you can mark it down, they're a fourth-place team, in my opinion, even with Story, and I love the pickup. I mean,
Alan, let me stop you for 1 second. Let me ask you this question. If they're planning to let Bogarts go at the end of the year, would you trade him now, or would you hold on to him?
I'd hold on to him.
Okay, as would I.
Yes, because first of all, he's going to opt out, and let him go at it. Well, let him go and sign him. First of all, are they addressing Mass the pitching? I mean, I do apologize to you because you probably don't remember, but I told you Sale would be on the disabled list by May 1st, so I was wrong.
Okay, you know, so Alan, yeah, I'm going to let you go just because I want to get to some other calls. We'll get to Sale in the next segment. I wasn't here last week when the injury was announced. Not when it happened, when it was announced. So we'll get to him in a minute. Brendan's in Weymouth. I'm sorry, Murray. Hold on 1 second.
No, go to the call. Because in the prior segment, you had mentioned that email that you got from Matt the Stat, and you wanted to talk, I think, a little bit more about the road stats and how he wanted to make a case for how those numbers dropped. But go ahead.
Okay, so Brendan, quickly go.
I just want to say, honestly, I like Bogarts, but I would offer him $5,125 with the ability to make more with incentives. And if he doesn't want that, I would just say see you later. I just want him for five more years, like you were saying, Maz. I don't let him get over that 34 year. You know, I just say, you know what, we like you, we want you here, but if it's too much, if it's not enough, then see you later.
Okay, so look, again, you can draw the line wherever you want. I think it's going to be at about 30. I don't know if he'll get the 35 he wants, but that's what he's going to ask for. He's going to ask for Correa money. He's going to ask for Lindor money.
As he should, again, just in terms of some of the metrics that now that the metric nerds are going to ignore, he's better than those players.
And you know, his agent is Boris. So he's going to ask for that money. Murray, do you have that email in front of you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, so did you want the Coors hangover effect?
Yes, Okay, so I'll tell you what, Murray, hold on to that thought. Okay, hold that thought, and we'll do it when we come back in the next segment. I also want to get to Chris Sale. And we'll do that when we come back. Again, the Coors hangover effect is what Murray's calling it. That Matt the Stat, Mac, I don't want to say his last name, was an auction winner here on Felger and Maz and Christmas in the City, and then periodically sends us emails with analytics in it. Big analytics guy, nice guy, but one of the greatest, biggest nerds on the planet. Sent us something called the Coors hangover effect, which I want to read from. I want to address the Chris Sale injury when we come back on
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The most popular afternoon radio show in Boston.
Back in your face, suck it!
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I let them know whenever our first day was here. So we, the CBA literally got agreed upon, right? I forget what day that was, but I got a call from Chaim, you know, AC, and that night, sucked for them, obviously. Hey, how's it going? Well, not so good, actually. So, that's when they became aware of it. And you guys know how I am with you guys. I try to be open. I try to be transparent. That's why I didn't talk yesterday, was because we didn't have the MRI disc from the doctor that did the MRI here in town. So I just got that to them today, actually. So we're still don't exactly know what the landscape going forward is going to be, other than probably a little bit more rest, waiting for, you know, a bone to heal. And then from there, we'll, you know, build up a plan and go from there.
So obviously, Chris Sale from last week. I know this is old news, but I did want to touch on it quickly. And I think it's even more important now that the Red Sox have signed Trevor Story. Chris Sale was supposed to be an anchor for him here at the start of the year. This was supposed to be the year he's fully recovered from Tommy John surgery. And now he's got a stress fracture in his rib cage from throwing. And you know what part of the story really bugs me, Murray? He didn't tell him until the lockout was over? He didn't mention it? What, because the union told him, don't talk to your team? Like, at some point, and I understand it was a law, well, don't blame the players. The owners are the ones who locked them. Listen, they were going to play sooner or later. Your ace is injured. Somebody can't pick up the phone and say, hey, just heads up. I know we're not supposed to talk.
But... And by somebody, he means Sale, yeah.
Or his agent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That,
or someone who's a teammate.
He would have owed it to the organization to say, hey, like you said, just a heads up. You know, if and when this thing gets going here, I've had this injury, so just be aware of it.
I mean, given that the market had not fully unfolded yet,
right?
Maybe there's something the Red Sox could have done to address it. I don't know. I'm just asking. And then maybe I'm being a little too sort of idealistic here, but we all know tampering goes on. We all know they break the rules when they are not supposed to, because the rules are sort of stupid to begin with when it comes to tampering and free agency. Everybody knows what teams want what players. Your ace gets hurt and he doesn't tell the team. That one kind of bugged me a little. Quickly, I just wanted to get that off my chest.
What the hell are they going to do? Should they be looking for another arm?
They should be, but they're not going to now. I mean, you know, it's too late. So could they trade for one somewhere along the line? Sure. And let me leave open. They could trade during spring training if they want. I mean, I don't think they're going to. I think that they are pretty locked into personnel at this stage. Having signed Story, I'm not anticipating any other major moves. I hope I'm wrong. But just so everyone's aware, because the luxury tax thing gets a lot of attention. I think with this signing now, based on what I saw online, the Red Sox payroll is up around $250 million, which means they're over the threshold by $20 million. They're going to, it's actually closer to $25, and then they're going to pay a $5 million tax on top of that. So based on what I saw online this morning, their payroll this year is like $260 million. I, too, was worried that they weren't going to go over the tax line again, but clearly they are. And it's not about the tax line. It's about the kind of player you're going to sign. If you're worried about the tax line, you're not going to sign a guy to an 8-year, $200 million contract. And the Red Sox should never, never be out of the market for that kind of player. Quickly, on Trevor Story and the Coors Field effect, because we read the numbers for you earlier. Batting average, 60 points lower career on the road. Last year on the road, he hit .203. Then OPS is 200 points lower on the road than at home. 200 points lower. So these are things that you would think would concern stats people, nerds. Except apparently they don't, because all they do really is use the stats to defend everything the Red Sox do. Or for that matter, any team does. Okay, so in our email that we received again from a fan of the show. Who
very thorough.
Matt the Stat, we call him. Murray, read the part about the Coors Field effect.
Yeah, I thought this was rich. The short version of this goes as follows, he writes. Because Rockies hitters have to constantly adjust to breaking pitches that don't move when they are at home, and then back to breaking pitches that break sharply at sea level, particularly in pitcher-friendly parks like San Diego, Dodger Stadium, and San Francisco, they end up at a massive disadvantage when traveling on the road. Since so much of a perfect baseball swing is about repetition and consistency, it is a massive disadvantage to make this adjustment every time you go on the road. Therefore, both the pure road stats as well as the park-adjusted advanced numbers tend to underrate Rockies hitters when it comes to their pure ability. I doubt you care about the gory number details that go into this effect, which he calls the Coors hangover effect. But he had some link to some evidence. And he says, also, do not use Troy Tulowitzki as an example of what longtime Rocky players did after leaving Coors Field. Tulowitzki had major hip surgery at the end of 2014, just before he was traded out of Colorado, and he was never the same hitter after that point. But, they get something for everything, these people.
Exactly right. And look, again, Troy Tulowitzki is the best comp because he was a shortstop. So you look at Troy Tulowitzki and you say, well, wait a minute, he left Coors Field and he was never the same player. Now, was there an injury thing there? Yeah, I guess. Did you see Dante Bichette play in Coors Field and
yes.
See him play everywhere else?
Yeah.
He wasn't very good.
A lot of help of steroids there, too.
I mean, he wasn't very good. So, again, the Coors Field effect is indisputable. So now they have to, now we can't even give them, now we have to give the hitters credit for when they're not at Coors because they have to adjust to real breaking balls. Well, that means you can't hit a breaking ball.
Right.
Is what it means. And for people who've never heard this before, because it's not just about the ball traveling when it's in the air off the bat at Coors Field, because of the dryness, the balls are really slick and they're hard to spin. This has been true from the very beginning. Now, again, the humidor was in part used to combat that, but the idea was that you couldn't spin the ball as acutely, and so breaking balls were flat, and they were easier to hit. Again, part of the equation, but not the whole story. Obviously, the altitude has a great deal to do with it. Justin in Rhode Island. Justin, go ahead.
Tony, I have to give you a new boss and John Henry a lot of credit with this signing. Going into free agency and throughout the course of the beginning of free agency, I didn't think he was going to do anything because he was allocating all of his money on the Penguins and trying to get in Liverpool and trying to get that Super League up and going out in England and then the NBA team in conjunction with LeBron. So I do give him a lot of credit. So you got yourself a great new boss. Hey, my other point is, Tony, the Red Sox need to have deals done for Devers and Bogarts here moving forward. They're the Red Sox. They're not the Rays. They're not the Kansas City Royals. They are a big market team. You brought these guys up through your system. They work here in Boston. The fans love them. And up until last year, and Bogarts not proving that he can play in October, it seems like they both can play in October. Okay. And that's what the aspirations and the goals are, right?
Yeah, so look, Justin, Devers to me feels like a clutch hitter. And in fact, if you were to say to me right now, and this may surprise you, you can only have one, Devers or Bogarts. I think I'm keeping Devers. He's younger.
I think more power. I mean, that's
He's clearly fearless in the batter's box. I mean, nothing seems to bother the guy. He's just kind of goofy, but that ends up being an attribute in some ways or an asset in some ways. And important factor for me here, left-handed. So you're going to see right-handed pitchers 70% of the time. I want that lefty bat. To find a lefty bat like that is hard. It's hard. And so, I'm keeping them. Steve's in Webster. Go ahead.
Hey, so I'm kind of a novice when it comes to stats and stuff. How different are normal, like, everyday players, like, splits on the home and road? Are they that far off, or are they, like, 50-50? And the other thing, if they can't spin the ball in Colorado, why don't they let them use the spider tack there?
I was waiting for that comment. I knew that was going to pop up at one point.
But are they that dramatic?
So, look, oftentimes teams, usually guys will have better home splits than road splits for lots of reasons. One of which is teams try to build their teams around the ballpark. So, for example, as we were discussing one day last week, Paul O'Neill, the day that he had his number retired by the Yankees. Paul O'Neill hit for more power in New York. Why? Short right field. So that was part of it. And this is one of, you know, the age-old things, get guys who fit your ballpark. Now, according to reports that are out there, Story's a guy with pull power and lofts the ball when he hits it out. So, in theory, Fenway Park should help his power numbers. Maybe they will. Maybe the drop for him won't be as great. Maybe his road numbers, quote-unquote his Fenway numbers or road numbers, will be closer to what his Colorado numbers were. I don't know. We'll find out. And I'm not telling you I hate the player. I like the player. He's a good player. Those home road numbers on those guys in Colorado always scare the crap out of me. Every single one of them. So, look, here's what we're going to do. We got a busy day, as you know. And I keep meaning to mention this, but obviously the NHL trade deadline just went by about 20 seconds ago.
Deadline. Get your deadline here.
So, the Bruins made a big deal over the weekend. We're going to switch to hockey here at the top of the hour. Obviously, we'll continue to take your calls on everything through the course of the day. But we'll tell you whether or not the Bruins actually managed to trade Jake DeBrusk, which they had to do before 3 p.m. Regardless, they did make a big trade over the weekend. We will tell you the DeBrusk. We'll give you the latest update on everything in terms of the NHL maneuverings. McBone will get you caught up, and then we'll hit on the Bruins when we come back. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.